Hi, guys. It's Jay. Thanks for listening to Blockbusting, as always, continuing my run of Edinburgh Fringe podcasts. Today's episode is with the lovely Jean Whitney, and she and I talk about No Country for Old Men, the Coen Brothers classic, Best Picture winner, and a movie that Jean just couldn't get on board with. And it's a really interesting episode. I really enjoyed having this talk with her. If you're out here at Edinburgh Fringe, you should come see both of our shows. She and I both have late shows. Hers is at Just the Tonic at the Caves. Mine is at the Place Hotel. We talk about all the details at the end of the episode. So listen through. If you like the show, join the Facebook group, tell a friend, and let's all have some fun times together, guys. Enjoy today's episode with Jean Whitney. Let me tell you something. Boston makes me feel good. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Blockbusting, the podcast where we love to hate the movies. I'm your host, Jay Light. Joining me today, Jean Whitney.
Hi, Jay.
Hey, Jean.
I always start things off awkwardly if I come on a podcast.
That's fine. We're awkward. We're sleep deprived. We're all the things. We're in a foreign country.
I know.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah. It is very foreign. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they speak English here, but not like an English I'm used to.
Yeah, I keep having to stop people as they say stuff because I have no idea what the fuck they're saying to
me.
Like I had last night, I took a bus home and I was in my phone and then I realized I was – because I usually take a different bus home than the one I did last night. And I realized we were at my stop and I got up and I was freaking out because I thought the bus driver was about to take off. And I run down to the door. I was like, hey, can I get out still? And he was like, you know that it's not about it? And I was like, what? And he was like, he slowed it down. And he was like, you know, there's a back door, right? And I was like,
I had no idea.
I had no idea. And I thought I was going to like throw down with the bus driver. I was very concerned.
But when they correct themselves, it's like they almost go like, I know. Like, I know this is hard to understand.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. I mean, I'm putting it, as long as I feel like we put in the effort to try and understand and just be like, sorry, hold on, what was that? Then you can't be that mad at us.
Yeah, I'm doing this a lot, which my dad would always do. And so it feels kind of old, but
hey, listen, there's nothing wrong with going through a little bit of pretend hearing loss or something in that vein. You've been to a lot of concerts in your life or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll find excuses for it.
Selective hearing mostly, but
well, speaking of old men, and things that old people do. Look, I'm so good at transitions today. I'm fucking on the ball today. You've come to talk about No Country for Old Men.
Yes.
Wow. Now this is a pick. This is a pick to hate. That is very strange.
Right.
You're the first person I've ever heard who doesn't like this movie.
Really?
Yeah.
I know everybody I met liked it. It was supposed to be like the Coen Brothers. Best movie?
Yeah, I would say it's probably their best movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely up there. I know some people could probably argue that Fargo is better or Barton Fink.
I liked Fargo.
Fargo's very good.
Yeah.
But No Country for Old Men is, you know, 2007 American neo-western crime thriller written and directed by the Coen Brothers. Stars Tommy Lee Jones, Javier Bardem, and Josh Brolin. Follows a Texas welder and Vietnam veteran in the desert landscape of 1980 West Texas. It was awarded Best Picture, Best Director, Best Supporting Actor, Best Adapted Screenplay at the Oscars, 3 BAFTAs, including Best Director.
Wow.
And 2 Golden Globes. More critics included No Country for Old Men on their 2007 top 10 lists than any other film. As of February 2018, various sources recognized it as one of the best films of the decade and still one of the entire best films of the 2000s.
So I'm wrong.
I don't know. Well, that's the thing. That's why I really like this take. Yeah. I am interested to hear what you don't like about it. So what don't you like about it?
I mean, I can see how people would like the movie. And it was very artsy in a way. I just thought it was the most boring piece of shit I've ever seen. I actually fell asleep.
Really?
Yeah, I had to rewatch parts because I didn't. I just fell asleep after that coin toss. There's like a coin toss he does with the guy in like the gas station.
Infamous scene.
And I was like, God, this guy's crazy. He's a villain. He's not even a likable villain. Like, I feel like some villains have to be at least a little likable. And there was no music in the movie, and which is probably good for the movie, but for me, that was really boring.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just so silent. It's just guys with guns following each other around for a briefcase of money. That's very Coen Brothers, right?
It's always very about Coen money. Brothers. There's always a briefcase of money in
There's
a Coen Brothers
There's always a briefcase
movie.
Of money. And I don't know. I was just like, this is, I guess you can't say things are gender stereotyped anymore, but I felt like at the time I was like, this is a man's movie. Men would enjoy this movie. I did not enjoy this movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I think these are all valid reasons to dislike the movie. So let's go bit by bit. So the villain.
Yeah.
Javier Bardem. So, all right. He's playing this guy. He's, you know, very clearly not a charming character. He's ruthless.
Right.
Like the first thing you see him do is he uses that cattle gun on a guy and punches a hole in his brain.
Yeah,
and
that's
murders
pretty
him.
Gnarly.
It's gnarly.
Yeah.
From the jump. And then the coin toss scene. It's just like there's something about it. For me, something like wrapped me in, even though I'm like, this guy is definitely bad news.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got a code. He's a weirdo. He's quirky, but not likable.
No.
Which I don't mind so much in a villain.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm okay with having a villain who's not necessarily likable.
Mm.
If that villain is also – like if they are solely – it was like a singular – their singular purpose is just to be – a force of evil.
And hated.
Right.
Yeah.
Then I can get on board with that. Who are some villains that you like in movies? You're like a Hans Gruber type, somebody who's a little bit more fun to watch.
There's this movie called The Stand. It's a Stephen King novel.
Okay.
And the devil is played by this guy named Randall Flagg.
Okay.
That's not the actor's name. I don't know the actor's name, but the devil calls himself Randall Flagg, and he's just very charming.
Let's see the actress in that.
And also, I loved Cersei in Game of Thrones.
Okay. And so what about those two do you like? Because I'm not familiar with Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
Cersei is the Lena Headey, right?
Yes.
Okay. So she seems just kind of. I have been very, like I said, this is my only amount of knowledge that I have of Game of Thrones.
Right,
I watched like 3 episodes.
Yeah.
And I saw Cersei getting the shame bell rung at her.
Mm-hmm.
And she seems kind of like arch and sort of like a boss bitch kind of lady. But I don't really know a whole lot about her as a character. So what about her as a character do you like?
I can kind of see why she is so evil. Like I could see where she got, like her background and how horrible her life was. So you can see how she was pushed to those limits. And also she just does not give up. Like whatever she wants, she finds a way to get it. She doesn't care. She'll mow down anything in her path. And it's kind of awesome. And then the actress who plays her is just so good.
Mm-hmm.
And like beautiful. So I just really loved her.
Okay.
I guess if a villain is pretty, then.
If we have more pretty villains.
But then Javier Bardem is pretty.
But he's not in this movie.
No, he's not.
He's got a terrible haircut.
Yes. If he had a better haircut, maybe I would have liked him.
I mean, did you see the James Bond movie that he was a villain in, Skyfall?
No.
He's real pretty in that.
Yeah.
He's blonde.
Ooh, I probably would have liked him.
You would enjoy him in that. He's real charming. The scene in that movie where they introduce him as the villain is so compelling because it's a single shot and it takes place. It's a single static shot, no less, where James Bond is basically like woken up on this island and he's been kidnapped and he's coming to. And then you just see Javier Bardem just a dot in the distance. It's this big long room. It's like a train station or a warehouse. And Javier Bardem's character starts talking to him and just slowly walking towards him.
Yeah.
And he's just like, you know, it's a classic villain speech. I don't remember the exact details, but it's in the genre of like, yeah, look, you're in my lair. I've caught you. Ha, ha, ha. And all that stuff. And he's just slowly walking towards the camera. And he's just like, and then he finally shows up and it's like,
the 3 minute long sequence that's just this one shot of him walking across the warehouse to one end. And then you're like, oh, Javier Bardem.
Yeah.
You're charming. I like you in this.
He is. He's very charming, but he did a good job of not being charming in this movie.
I think it says a lot that he was able to win Best Supporting Actor despite playing a character that is not only unlikable, but very much in... He's sort of... what's the best way to put this? How do I want to put this? He's almost like... He's kind of robotic. Like, it's a character that I feel like in the hands of a different actor, it wouldn't have worked.
Mm.
I think Javier Bardem is a good pick for this role.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a bad actor will be robotic with a passionate character sometimes.
Right.
But to make robotic interesting or...
Like, well, let me ask you this.
Low energy characters interesting. Yeah.
So if you took a different actor to play Anton Chigurh in this movie, mm-hmm. and they gave them some, like, you know, some vim and vigor, and they actually came off as kind of charming and likable, would that have caused you to appreciate this movie more, or do you think it would have ruined the tone?
It probably would have ruined the tone, but I would have liked it.
A little bit more splitting the difference.
Because the tone put me to sleep. I was just like, I mean, I don't know how this movie was made for sleeping. It's just really slow, and the monologues are all really slow, and there's no music, and even climatic moments, like, without the music, they just seem like everything else. It just seems paced like everything else in the movie.
Yeah. I mean, the majority of the people in this movie are men who are in middle age.
Yeah.
Also, it's very much a man's story, and it's a story for men, by men, designed to appeal to men because it's a Western, and Western's classically been a genre that dudes are very like, yeah, let's get on board with this. I mean, my favorite movie is in that genre. Mm-hmm. It's came out the same year as No Country for Old Men. Why can't I remember it? There Will Be Blood.
There Will Be Blood.
Great
movie. That was good. I think I also fell asleep.
See, I can see why. I don't. That's the thing. It's like sometimes when people tell me that they don't like a movie that is widely regarded as a great movie, I absolutely do not understand.
Yeah.
And in this case, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
I think your criticisms are wrong, but I think that they make sense. Like, you at least have logic behind them.
Mm-hmm.
Are you someone? What was your experience like watching this movie? Did you see it in theaters? Did you watch it after the fact?
I saw it in theaters with a friend, and he loved it.
Okay.
And then I walked out, and I was like, "What is the big deal with this movie? I did not understand."
Okay.
I was like really dumbfounded how everybody loved it. I thought it was just boring. There was one scene I did like with Woody Harrelson.
Mm-hmm. He's playing the deputy in this movie.
Yeah, the deputy.
The sheriff, some guy.
Because Woody Harrelson's just awesome. Like, he just is magnetic. And before he dies, he doesn't really beg for his life.
Uh-huh.
You know, he just kind of sits in that chair and he's like, I'll give you 14 grand.
Right. There's a lot of really slow moments in this movie.
Yeah.
That sort of build to things. I mean, the only part that I can remember is being like an actual sort of action-packed sequence is when Josh Brolin and Anton Chigurh are actually like running around that hotel, basically.
Yeah.
And they're running around this small town. And that's really action-packed. And it felt very different than other Coen Brothers movies have that I have seen. Like, I know that the Coens also have done a fair amount of movies that are a little bit slower paced and are a little bit, you know, they're more focused on different aspects than doing sort of the wacky madcap stuff that they do in, saying like Burn After Reading,
mm-hmm.
or A Serious Man. They do some of that. And I mean, even in Fargo, they kind of split the difference, which they have all of the stuff that's very same sort of vibe as No Country for Old Men, where there's a lot of like really dark shit going on. But there's also a lot of it's funny and it's weird, and the characters are just, there's something endearing about the characters, even the villains, in that movie. Except for, what do you think about Peter Stormare in that movie? As he's sort of someone who I could see have played Anton Chigurh in this movie and done.
Which one are you talking about?
The guy. So he's the one in Fargo who feeds Steve Buscemi into the wood chipper.
Oh,
because he's sort of the same vibes character wise.
I could see that.
Mm-hmm. But Steve Buscemi playing Anton Chigurh, I don't think would work.
That would just be silly. That would turn it into a comedy.
It would be too silly.
If he went in there, I don't know how to do a Steve Buscemi like impression, but it's a coin toss. You know, like,
what's the most you ever lost on a coin toss?
Yeah, like that.
Ah, come on. Well, because it's interesting. Did you ever watch Boardwalk Empire?
Yeah.
Steve Buscemi is solid as the villain in that.
Yes.
As Nucky. Because, but there's something about him like.
He loses control.
Yeah.
And I think this villain has complete control all the time. When he gets mad, Buscemi loses control. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just remember this one scene where Buscemi was like, they were putting out glasses at his place or hotel or something.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, what? He saw some lipstick on a glass and he's like, this whore's lipstick on this glass. And it's just kind of funny to me, you know, like,
yeah,
he's
Steve Buscemi would not be able to
character.
Keep his cool in this movie.
No,
you need someone who can keep his cool. That's the whole movie is just a movie. It's everybody's keeping their cool in this movie. Nobody's really reacting to things in this movie.
No, I think that's why it kind of put me to sleep.
Hey, I mean, Let's talk about ambivalence in the ending of this movie as well. So this movie very famously wraps up with a scene of, so first of all, you find out that Josh Brolin gets murdered and the briefcase is gone and his wife finds him and it's very sad. And it's a thing where I remember watching the movie and being like, oh, he actually might get away with, He might pull this off. He might be able to get away from being chased by Javier Bardem.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't know how to pronounce this. I've heard so many people say
Bardem,
it all the time.
Bardem? I don't know.
Anton. We're going to call him by his character
Anton.
Name. Just to save everybody the hassle. And I remember thinking, okay, maybe he'll pull it off. And then he gets outsmarted at the end. And I remember being like, oh, that's a bummer.
You were rooting for him, yeah.
I was rooting for him. And he loses. And then you have the sequence where Tommy Lee Jones, who's also been chasing after both of them this entire time, is talking to his buddy in the wheelchair, his uncle Ellis. And they say, they're talking about how it's always violent and you can't stop what's coming. And the whole crux of the movie kind of reveals itself in there, which is, yeah, sometimes the bad guys win and you can't change things. And sometimes the story is going to unravel or unfold the way that you hope it is not going to. And then that's okay. What do you think about that sort of standpoint as like where to end the movie from?
I guess it's a bold choice. I think the whole movie didn't unfold the way I wanted it to. And,
but you didn't like that.
Yeah, I don't. It was just kind of, it seemed pointless.
Okay.
It's like, what is this about? What is the point of this movie? It's just why did he take the briefcase? It's not your money. Just leave it.
Everybody loves a briefcase full of money.
Right. But he's just an idiot. The whole reason for the movie is that Josh Brolin's a moron and he just takes this money and then he gets his wife in trouble and then she dies. She's killed. I would have done the coin toss if I were her, honestly.
She should have done the coin toss.
Yeah.
She should have. I don't know why she didn't do the coin toss.
I don't either.
It would have worked out just as well.
I guess she had nothing to live for, maybe. Maybe she thought, like,
yeah, maybe.
I'm not going to play into your game.
Okay. I mean, that's basically, that's her standpoint during that scene, too. But does it have to, in your mind, because you think it, you just said it, it's pointless.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that there's a direction that the story could have taken that would have made it feel more purposeful? Like, is there anything that could have changed about the movie as it stands now that would have made you like it? Maybe you're still falling asleep during it. Maybe it is still wind up being boring, but maybe something changes. Maybe something flips the switch and you wind
up liking
it. I
don't know. Maybe if Josh Brolin had some epiphany and he gave the money back.
Okay. I feel like he might have still,
I feel like that money doesn't really belong to anybody.
It doesn't belong to anybody.
Yeah.
No, it's just kind of nebulous. It's like, you know, just floating in the air.
Right.
Javier Bardem's not supposed to have it. Josh Brolin's not supposed to have it.
If it had gotten lost completely, I guess, and if some pastor, I don't know. I don't know what could have saved this movie.
It's a tough one because I don't think that this movie, you know, obviously we're on opposite sides here.
Yeah.
Like literally and figuratively. But I don't think there's anything in this movie that needs saving.
Mm-hmm.
But now that we're talking about it more, it does make me want to go back and rewatch it again because I have a sneaking suspicion that I might not like it the way that I did when I saw it at the time I did.
Mm. Well, I can see why how someone would like it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, there's the cinematography is really good, and there's moments that's like, oh, that's visually beautiful, even though it's really mm-hmm. gory and creepy. Like there's a moment when Woody Harrelson's blood is spilling on the floor, and then Anton just puts his boots up on the couch.
Mm-hmm.
And like it just shows how evil he is.
Right.
You know, it's just nobody matters to him. Life is meaningless to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why when Josh Brolin's wife is given the choice, and by the way, Kelly MacDonald, I think, does a very good job in this movie playing that part. But when she gives him the choice, instead of saying, take the coin toss, you know he's going to kill her. And then you don't have to see him kill her to know that he did because he checks his boots for the blood.
Yeah.
You know he's going to, that's all he was going to do anyway.
Doesn't want to get his boots dirty.
He doesn't want to get his boots dirty. He just wants to murder you.
Yeah.
He's a ruthless robotic killing machine.
Yeah. He is the Terminator.
You know what?
He has as much emotion.
Okay. I know how we save this movie to make it exciting for you.
He becomes the Terminator?
He faces off with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes. That would be great.
And that would be a lot of fun and a little bit wacky.
Yeah.
I would love to see a Coen Brothers Terminator movie. I know James Cameron has the monopoly on it, but
maybe if they could all get together. I think that would be great.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
I think they could pull it off.
And if there's like some music at the end.
Yeah. There's really nothing. We need just a little bit of music.
Yeah.
I get it. It's all in the name of adding to the atmosphere of the movie and making the audience feel tense and uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it's a cool movie, but it also is a movie that does make you feel uncomfortable because you're watching a lot of bad shit go down. And there's no end in sight.
Yeah, and you feel bad for the people that it's mm-hmm. happening to, and then there's no justice.
Yeah. Do you like any Westerns, like any other sort of movies in this genre that have come out lately? Or are they all sort of...
What Westerns have come out lately?
The one that comes to mind immediately for me is Hell or High Water.
I don't think I saw that.
So Hell or High Water, it's a movie... I think you'd probably like it a little bit more than No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
Because the villains in it are much more charming. It's a movie about two brothers who start robbing banks, and Jeff Bridges is the sheriff he's a Texas Ranger,
mm-hmm.
and he comes to try and chase them down.
That was supposed to be like the movie of the year, right? A couple years ago?
It was very good.
Yeah.
And is actually, I believe, made by a Scottish director. Shout out to where we currently are.
Wow.
But it's really good.
Okay.
And I know the Coens also, they're sitting in the Western genre. They like Ballad of Buster Scruggs they made. And the other one with Jeff Bridges. Oh, gosh. True Grit.
True Grit. Oh, okay. I did like that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can't remember it too well.
But the characters are more charming in that one.
Yeah. Maybe that's it. I like music and charming characters.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. What's your favorite movie?
You know what? I love Braveheart.
There's music and charming characters in that.
Such beautiful music and charming characters. And there is a lot of fighting. I do like fighting in movies.
Okay.
And there's a love story. What's not to like about Braveheart?
Yeah, there's no love story in No Country for Old Men.
It's so dramatic, though. I feel like a lot of 90s movies, were very dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
And if you watch it today, it's just like, wow, the monologues are very overly dramatic, very melodramatic.
Yeah. Well, the 90s is sort of, I feel like the movies I've watched in the 90s are all very it's everything is so dialed up mm-hmm. and everything is so bright. Like, because the 80s, there's the big 80s aesthetic of everything's like neon and fun. And then the 90s, it's just this time of prosperity in America. So everyone's like, yeah, everything's great. Let's make everything as like bombastic as possible and super hyped up. And that's where you get movies like Braveheart and Clueless. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't know why those are the only Forrest memories that
Gump
I can remember
was
90s, from the
90s. Right?
Yeah. Hold on. Let's look at the best picture list, because No Country for Old Men is on that. And I'll be able to see some things from the 90s. Let's see. That is not what I wanted to see. Here we go. Best picture winners from the 90s. You got Silence of the Lambs.
I liked that.
You got Unforgiven, another Western.
I don't think I saw that.
Schindler's List.
I mean, that was a good movie. Yeah, it's weird also, to call it a good movie.
It won Best Picture.
Yeah.
A bunch of people said it was a good movie.
I mean, yes, but it's just so awful.
Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park is a big bombastic dramatic movie. Same with Forrest Gump, which is on here.
Mm-hmm.
Titanic, the biggest, most bombastic movie of them all.
Oh my God, I rewatched that and I was just like, ugh.
You get swept away. Love story and charming characters and music. Yeah. Oh, so much music. There's a music in that
music
movie.
Music and pretty dresses and mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
But then this is the slate of movies that won in the 2000s when everybody is dark and depressed now. We start out okay with A Beautiful Mind in 2001
because mm-hmm.
that's the one that's before everything. And then Chicago wins because it's post 9/11 and America needs to feel happy and watch
a
musical.
Oh, yeah. I liked Chicago.
Even if it's a musical about women in prison. And then you go Lord of the Rings. And then Depression Central.
Uh-oh.
Million Dollar Baby. Crash.
Oh, my God. Yes.
The Departed. No Country for Old Men. Slumdog Millionaire, which is sort of inspirational.
Dark movies.
But also very dark. The Hurt Locker. Super dark. The Hurt Locker is one of the darkest movies I have ever seen. I mean, you got a guy
who was in that?
Jeremy Renner.
Okay.
And
you know what? I don't know if I saw that, actually.
Oh, Hurt Locker's great.
The Hurt Locker.
It's a war movie, but it's about a guy who's like a bomb defusal technician.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of death. And Jeremy Renner is also so, like, you can tell the whole time, the whole military, it's a military movie. So everybody's like, okay, we gotta get the fuck home.
I remember it, yeah.
And then he's in that scene where he's at the very end of the movie and he's in the grocery store. With my good old Michelle Monaghan, his wife, and he's so uncomfortable in the grocery store that he re-enlists and goes back to the Middle East.
Yeah, then he misses the war.
Yeah, that's dark.
I know. I mean, that happens to a lot of people, I guess.
I guess, but it doesn't feel good to see that happen. Ugh.
But what a perfect movie for the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, what year was that? Were we in the war?
2009. I mean, we're still in the war, so
yeah,
that's not changing anytime soon. Yeah, it's interesting. Now I'm looking at this list of movies that have won Best Picture over the course of the years, and it's so like, so we went from Hurt Locker to The King's Speech in 2010, and King's Speech is this, you know, oh man, it's inspirational. The guy stuttered, and then he stopped stuttering. Oh well, good job. And then
that was a feel good movie.
Yeah, and then The Artist was a feel good movie, and that was right after mm-hmm. that. Silent movie about old Hollywood? Oh, what's more feel good than that?
Right.
Not a lot.
La La Land. Did La La win?
No, it did not win.
Right.
Because this is when we start to turn again. So Argo's fun. Argo's just like a fun time in the movies. We need that. And then after that, they were like, all right, let's get back to darkness, but not darkness about white people. No, no. Let's go with 12 Years a Slave. And that
other
movie
people
wins.
Are depressed too.
Right.
We gotta have some equality.
And then so they go, all right, well now we know that black people are depressed. So let's talk about how artists are depressed. And Birdman wins Best Picture the next year. And then Spotlight, because there's no movie about Catholicism and sex abuse.
Oh yeah.
And they're like, hey, this is time.
I remember that one. I didn't see it.
I didn't see it either.
I should have seen it.
My girlfriend says it's the worst. She thinks it's the worst movie to ever win Best Picture, I think.
Oh, really?
I know. I might be speaking a little bit much on her behalf, but I know she hated it. She said it felt like a Hallmark movie.
A Hallmark movie about molestation?
Mm-hmm. In terms of like the quality of the writing and the acting.
Ah.
It was like bad.
Okay.
Yeah. Not like a feel-good. I guess a Lifetime movie is probably the better. Hallmark movies are always feel-good.
Right.
And there's nothing feel-good about molestation. Like, unless you're the priests. They feel good. They like it.
Yeah, but if they get caught and move to another place, right. What a bummer for them. That's pretty sad.
Yeah. I guess I know they had to change. They got to change their whole routine.
Another
up.
Diocese, is that what it's called?
A parish diocese. I think it depends on where you're at.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is, you know, No Country for Old Men won Best Picture at a time when people were sort of. It seems like a movie. Like I was 17 when No Country for Old Men was out.
What
and
year
about.
Was it?
It won in 2007.
Okay.
So it was this movie that I remember it. I remember watching it. So it technically won 2008, if we're being like technical about when Oscar ceremonies happen. But it's a 2007 movie. And it's. I remember there were a lot of movies out at the time that were sort of just bleak and interesting. And I was very intrigued by that because it was just like I'm like in the post-angsty teen period of my life at this point. And I'm just like, oh, this feels like this is like a film, like a capital F film that I'm watching. And I'm like, this is really interesting. And I feel like a lot of people watched that and felt the same, even though they weren't necessarily teens. They're like, this is an accessible capital F film.
Mm-hmm.
That's not necessarily, it's winning, it's going to win Best Picture on its own merit and not like, no, There Will Be Blood is a hard one to win Best Picture for me, because I think it's the best movie of the year and my favorite movie of all time, but it's not just a capital F. It's like screaming at you that it's a film the entire time.
Yeah.
This is a little bit more popcorny because you got violence and it's the Coen brothers.
Yeah.
It's the Coens.
I was working at Arclight when this came out.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah. I was going to school in Los Angeles and I was working at Arclight for a little bit. And this movie was just huge. People loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't understand.
Well, sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, Dreamgirls was really huge too at that time. I think that came out a little bit before it.
I think it did, but
in 2006.
Didn't even get nominated for Best Picture, which
it didn't
is crazy.
At all. Oh,
yeah. I was very surprised. I remember a lot of people were very surprised by that.
I wonder why. Who I mean, knows? It was selling out like every night.
Yeah.
Every day, every night, every day.
I got no idea. Who knows, Gene? Well, is there a movie that you would recommend people watch instead of No Country for Old Men? Like, mm-hmm. What's one that you would turn to if you wanted to see some of the stuff that you didn't see in No Country for Old Men?
Oh, it does. That's like a Western?
Not necessarily a Western, but something with more compelling characters, stuff that doesn't feel necessarily like all men all the time that are old and depressed. Which doesn't sound like a genre of movie that you're the biggest fan of.
You should see Fight Club.
Young men that are depressed. I like it.
I like, yes, young men that are depressed. Are there any movies with old men that are depressed that I really like? I'm blanking.
Maybe that just means there aren't any.
Right now. I mean, another Coen Brothers movie that I loved, Fargo. We talked about that.
Mm-hmm. It's hard.
Jeez. Right now I'm watching a lot of television.
Have you watched the Fargo TV series?
I haven't.
You should watch that.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. If you like Fargo, you'll like the TV series Fargo.
I did watch the first season of True Detective. I really loved.
True Detective?
That's some old men who are
depressed.
That's
some old men depressed shit.
Yeah, that is a beautiful, but there's music. And that's mm-hmm. just like a masterpiece, the first season.
Right.
And yeah, when you asked me to do this, I was like, I don't think there's any movies I hate. And then I thought of this, and then I realized I don't like a lot of Stanley Kubrick movies either.
Huh.
We're past that now.
We're past that now. We have finished the episode.
I just wanted to talk shit about him.
We still got time. Maybe we'll have a double back. Well, I'm glad that we were able to come talk about a contentious pick.
Yeah.
Good choice. Holy shit.
Thank you.
I wish that you liked it. This movie's great. But hey, it is what it is.
I can see why people like it. I just did not.
Yeah. I'm not here to change your mind. I'm just here to facilitate.
Right.
Let's make things happen. Gene, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Where can the listeners find you if they want to catch your work?
I actually am starting a podcast. I've been a little bit lazy about it, but it's called The Good Old Days. It's the link is on my Instagram.
Cool.
And I have one episode up. It's about movies from the past that today would be offensive.
Okay.
And you should be on it sometime.
I would love to.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, man. That sounds right up my alley.
It is.
Let's make it happen.
All right.
Cool. You can find, and where's your Instagram, by the way? Is it at?
Jean L. Whitney, and Jean is J-E-A-N-N-E.
Cool. You can find me at Diet J on Twitter and Instagram, jlightcomedy.com for show dates. Jean and I are both here at Edinburgh Fringe, so if you're catching this, we're still here.
Yep.
Come check out our shows. I'm at 11:45 p.m. every night at the Place Hotel. You are doing a Just the Tonic at the Caves?
Yeah, The Tonic at the Caves. One Chick, Two Dicks is the name of the show.
It's good posters.
Yeah.
I finally saw your show posters yesterday.
Oh, you did?
I really dig them.
Thank
Very
you.
Fun. Yeah, and then subscribe, tell a friend, join the Facebook group if you want to. And this has been Blockbusting. Go see something good for a change.